All righty. We talked earlier on in the program about the fact that eating bison is something that we do a lot of here on this program. Wild game and bison in particular, which is commercially available, has been for a few years now. Very lean, high protein, all that good stuff. But here's another side to that whole thing. Before Europeans arrived in North America, there were an estimated 30 million bison, plains bison, in this country. And by 1890, that number had been reduced by 99%. We think of it as a U.S. thing, American problem, and it's not. It was North American-wide. So they had dropped by 99%, and there were, in fact, at one point, 350 animals remaining in the original herd. So obviously it was teetering on, in fact, it still is teetering on extinction, because most of the bison that we talk about today, the stuff that is being consumed, is not, an original bison. For the most part, it's a hybrid. Genetics have been, combined with other animals such as cattle to create this perfect, animal that we consume.
Oh.
So, so the bison we're talking about right now, we will be talking in this segment, is not that animal. Joining us now is Greg Adams. He is a professor of veterinary biomedical science from the Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan. And, he is leading a team that wants to breed a pure strain of bison. Good morning. How are you, Dr. Adams?
Good morning, Angelo. I'm fine.
Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. First of all, how long have you been working on bison?
Well, it was, I guess, 2006 when I first got the real opportunity to do that. It's actually an interesting story. The effort was being made by Parks Canada and the government of the Northwest Territories to save wood bison. And they were going to ship a group of 50 pure wood bison down from Wood Buffalo National Park in Northwest Territories down to the University of Saskatchewan. But for various reasons, that particular movement, that shipment fell through. And but we got a group of animals from Elk Island National Park, and we got our start.
Now, first of all, explain to us wood bison and plains bison. This is not the same animal, right?
Yeah, that's correct. They're subspecies. They're very similar, and I think to the untrained eye, most folks wouldn't necessarily be able to distinguish the two. But it's a little bit like alpacas and llamas. They're different, but they can interbreed. So they're subspecies. The wood bison is native to the boreal forest region in Canada's north, and are indigenous to Canada. Plains bison are also indigenous to Canada, but range all the way from northern Mexico to Edmonton in their former range.
Now, the bison that we consume that is on the marketplace for consumption, what, although I know it's a hybrid and genetically altered, what is the base of that animal? Is it a plains or is it a wood?
Mostly plains bison. We should probably, I want to emphasize that the bison that bison producers produce is not genetically modified per se. In other words, there's not been any reproductive technologies that have genetically modified them. What they are is a result of early conservation efforts made by a lot of cattle producers back at the turn of the 20th century. And they were basically doing this to try to save the species, the bison species, that was dwindling down to almost nothing. So in those efforts, crosses were made, and that hybridization sort of continues to linger today. So there are no active efforts to hybridize bison and cattle today, but because those efforts were made through the early part of the 1900s, that legacy has stayed with us.
I got you. Okay. Let's talk about extinction. You make a point that there are two ways a species becomes extinct. Talk to us about that.
I think there, in general, there are two ways that species can become extinct. When the last individual dies, for instance, like the northern white rhino, there's only two left, two sisters left, and they're essentially extinct now because the only male in existence recently died. So that's one way. The other way is when they've been mixed with other species. So the species as it was is no longer exists.
Gotcha. Okay. Greg, can you stay with us for a couple of more minutes?
Sure.
I've got to take a quick break. More journal after this. Don't you dare miss it.
Jimmy Houston here from Jimmy Houston Outdoors. You know, when I'm not fishing, I'm listening to the Outdoor Journal radio show with Angelo Viola. Hey, let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Angelo Viola, as Jimmy said. By the way, I told you I ran into him recently, right, Jimmy?
No.
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, Garmin. We were at the Garmin.
Oh, yes, together. Yes, sorry.
Yeah. Still hanging in there, doing good stuff.
Still a full set of hair?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I told him it's got to be a wig. I was trying to pull it off him, and kept running away. So I'm wondering it might be then. Who knows? on the line with us, Dr. Greg Adams, professor of veterinary biomedical sciences in Western College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Saskatchewan. We're talking about the original bison herds that were in this country that Greg and his team are trying to keep from going into total extinction. And we were just talking about that before the break. What is the definition? How do you become extinct? What are the two different ways of becoming extinct? One of them, obviously, is there's the last animal is gone. And the other one is by interbreeding with something else and losing that gene, that made the animal unique. And where are we with the bison today in this country, Greg?
Well, with the bison in general have increased in numbers dramatically in the last 30 years, which is great. Most of them in commercial production herds, but the conservation herds have not increased, and there are some reasons for that. But the population of pure bison, which are known pure bison, are in the conservation herds, and that keeps hovering. It hasn't increased in the last 30 years, and we probably only have about 1,500 pure plains bison of known genetic fidelity in Canada. So 1,500 animals that can be useful for a conservation purpose. And part of the problem is that the same problem exists in the United States. It's the same plains bison, but they're kept in small conservation herds. And most of those conservation herds started from a very few animals. For instance, all of our 1,500 conservation animals in Canada stem from only 50 founder animals. So it's been a tremendous bottleneck. So I think there's an opportunity for all of these other bison and the bison producers to help us with the conservation effort. But I think it's important for us to try to restore the plains bison and the wood bison as pure subspecies and free of any cattle genes, if we can. And we can. We have some tools to do it.
Tell us a little bit about the project. How? What do you? You know, maybe you can explain some of the mechanics involved.
Yeah, sure. We see three main problems with conservation of bison. One is that there's a lack of genetic diversity. In other words, the gene pool is pretty shallow, and that they are in isolated small populations that can't trade their genetics. And lastly, disease. So in a way, in an effort to get around those issues, maybe I could tell just a little bit more about the story of the wood bison, because sure, that explains it. Wood bison are the world's biggest herd and most diverse herd is in Wood Buffalo National Park right here in Canada. But that herd has endemic brucellosis and tuberculosis, and those diseases not only kill bison, but they also are infectious to domestic animals. In fact, they came from cattle in the first place, but also they can infect humans. So those diseases have been the subject of veterinary work for the last century, and we've eliminated it from our domestic herd. But because those bison have those diseases, they threaten outside livestock and humans. And so I kind of liken it to Checkpoint Charlie. Those animals come up to the border of Wood Buffalo National Park, and if they stick the nose out, they're shot. And that's an effective program to prevent disease spread, but it's obviously not effective for preserving the species. So what if we could go up and collect the semen and collect the embryos, wash those free of those organisms, and then put them in a liquid nitrogen tank that would allow us to artificially inseminate or do embryo transfer on healthy animals? And so that's what we've been working on for the last dozen years, and we now can do it. We know that we can collect the semen, we can collect embryos, and freeze them, cryopreserve them in liquid nitrogen, and then thaw them back out and produce live offspring. So now that we have those tools, we're really excited about the possibility of you know, being able to reconnect all these herds that have been isolated for the last 100 years.
Do you have the problem of wild animals mingling with some of the domestic animals?
Yeah, the that is a threat, and that's in a nutshell, that's the problem. That's the worry. Is we have all of these other hybrid animals, or we don't even know exactly how many of those animals, what proportion of those animals are hybrid. We suspect, and there are some data to show that it's a high percentage, but we don't really know. So that whole group, that big group of animals that we could use, we don't know. And they represent a threat of continued hybridization. On the other hand, it's not easy to cross a cow and a bison, so they don't naturally interbreed.
But there is no visible difference between an animal from the original stock and an animal that we would consider a hybrid.
No, I don't think anybody would pick it out. But there are data to show that the hybrids, at least in one study, and it's difficult to study, show that those animals are less, maybe less vigorous, and aren't as big. However, that study, it's not clear to me whether that's because of crossbreeding or because of inbreeding. That's another problem. The genetic pool is pretty narrow.
Well, I got to tell you, it's a fascinating subject for me personally, because maybe strictly from greed standpoint, but I love bison meat. I consume it regularly.
Too.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So I'm always interested when we have good news and information on bison in this country, for sure. What's the next step for the project?
Well, we're working on a project. It's world's first bison genome biobank, and it will be the first sort of functioning biobank, I think, in the world, perhaps. And what I mean by that is it'll be a bank where we can collect this germplasm, semen, and embryos, wash it free of organisms, microorganisms, freeze it, and then instead of just storing it for posterity's sake or for insurance, we're going to actually use that, and nice. we'll create a network across North America, the U.S. and Canada to use that to be able to redistribute the genetics like they used to. They'd migrate from Texas right up to Saskatchewan, and they can't do that anymore. And I want to mention that the Canadian Bison Association has really stepped up to help out with this, and they have funded the development of some genomic tools. These genomic tools will allow us to distinguish between bison that have cattle introgression or bison that are mixed between wood and plains bison. So those tools are going to be tremendously helpful.
Cool. Sounds fascinating. I will keep an eye on it personally. I have personal interest, but I know the listeners love to hear this kind of stuff. So keep up the good work and come back and let us know how it's going.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Dr. Greg Adams, a professor of veterinary biomedical sciences with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Saskatchewan. Yeah.
Say that to me.
Fascinating. I love that project. That's fantastic.